Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Healthcare workers across Wisconsin got the first COVID-19 vaccinations this week. After Electoral College voters in Wisconsin's capital and across the nation elected President-elect Joe Biden, even Republican Senator Ron Johnson conceded that President Trump lost. A split Wisconsin Supreme Court rejected the president's campaign lawsuit to throw out 220,000 votes cast in Milwaukee and Dane counties. State officials urge new limits on PFAS. Rewind, your week in review for December 18.
COVID-19 vaccinations were given to healthcare workers across Wisconsin this week. Both Governor Evers, and Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm says it's a major development, and it is. But we have other additional worries as we go through the next holidays. So first, let's hear about Secretary Palm talking about the arrival of vaccines and what comes next.
I think people should feel good about the work that we are doing together. I think we should all feel particularly good that the vaccine is here and that we're starting to get it in arms. And use that as motivation to continue to do what we need to do to get to the light at the end of the tunnel here, all the while continuing to reduce our cases and the number of deaths. I think we feel pretty good about where our numbers are post Thanksgiving, recognizing that we are still, as a general proposition, way too high. While this is certainly hopeful news, we have to continue to drive down our numbers. We have to continue to be really vigilant about the mask wearing, about the staying at home, about the good hand hygiene. And it certainly means we have to keep our foot on the gas, and we have to double down as it relates to the upcoming holidays and do at least as well as we did for Thanksgiving over these next set of holidays.
So here's what we learned from Secretary Palm's briefing earlier this week. First priority for the vaccinations is about 400,000 healthcare workers, followed by 57,000 residents of skilled nursing homes, skilled nursing facilities is the secretary's term. Wisconsin was scheduled to get 49,725 doses of the Pfizer vaccine, and officials hope, pending approval by the FDA, to get 100,000 doses of the Moderna vaccine. There is a requirement, because of the extreme temperatures that the Pfizer vaccine must be kept at, that it must go through our 8 regional hubs. But Secretary Palm said that is not true of the Moderna vaccine, because it must be kept at not as cold as temperatures. So that can go directly from manufacturers to vaccinators. And but Health Services Secretary Palm says it will be months, her term, before vaccines are widely available. JR, here's what I want to talk about on this subject. Part of the package of Assembly Republicans, as you can remember, they want oversight over distribution of vaccines, yet Secretary Palm says the guidelines are coming from the feds. I'm just curious, do you think both Assembly and Senate Republicans will demand indeed oversight over who gets the vaccines, issues that'll come out over the next first few months of next year?
Oh, I mean, there's always a conflict between the legislative branch and the executive branch about oversight. I mean, lawmakers have long called for a say in how things are done. Executives have long said no. So, yeah, I can see Republicans asking for or putting that in their bill. The question is whether Evers would give up that up. And two, don't forget, here we are in mid-December. They're not coming on the floor the next couple of weeks. They have inauguration day in early January. By the time they get a bill on the floor, it could be mid, late January, best case scenario. So by then, how many vaccines will already be out the door? I'm not sure how much oversight they'd have left to exercise. And, you know, so it's a lot of questions about how this process is going to work, how many vaccines are going to roll out, and the negotiations are ongoing. I mean, I've talked to Devin Lemahieu, the incoming Senate Majority Leader. They have an outline of a bill at this point that Senate Republicans are talking about. Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, put out his bill at the beginning of this month. Governor Evers had his own bill. They continue to meet. There's no clear picture just yet of what an agreement might look like between them that could then guide us on what kind of oversight lawmakers might have, if any, about these vaccines.
And in that same briefing, Secretary Palm said that they're waiting on federal guidance on essential workers. And that I find that so intriguing, because where do teachers rank? I mean, obviously, healthcare workers, and then you have the, 57,000 residents of skilled nursing facilities. When do you vaccinate guard members who played such a key role in fighting COVID? Also, this incredible debate over when do you inoculate, when do you vaccinate our prison inmates who have been hit with high numbers of COVIDs, but whose guards then, when they leave work, go home to their home families and communities. It's just absolutely fascinating. And I just wonder whether federal or how much state officials will be able to decide that criteria over who gets shots. Any parting thoughts?
No.
Okay, let's move on. Monday at noon, R10 Electoral College voters cast 10 votes for President-elect Biden, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. This is how Governor Evers opened that session. Please.
I thank each of you for your service to the people of Wisconsin and the United States of America. It's an honor for me to preside over this event. Today we did our part to continue the long and sacred tradition of our democracy of honoring the will of the people. If you notice right up here when you come in, I'm reading it upside down, the will of the people is the law of the land. And we have accomplished that by determining who the next president and vice president of the United States are.
That vote in the governor's conference room came about an hour and a few minutes after the state Supreme Court ruled dismissing the latest Trump challenge. We'll talk about that in a minute. But that was such a interesting scene. You had the 10 masked electors 10 feet apart signing multiple forms, instructing the Electoral College to cast Wisconsin's 10 votes for Joe Biden. But let's turn to what happened after that. National Republicans, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and Ron Johnson, Wisconsin's senior Republican senator, he then said, "I haven't seen anything that would convince me that the overall national result would be overturned," but the senator wanted irregularities probed. J.R., did you watch then that hearing Senator Johnson brought the Trump campaign lawyer James Troupas to Washington? So any fallout from Johnson, who was so critical, and now he finally conceded that, yes, Mr. Biden won?
Well, remember that while Johnson's saying that Biden won, he's also talking about irregularities. He mentioned the word fraud, I believe, during the hearing. So at this point, and I've read a lot of legal briefs, there's been no actual fraud alleged by the Trump campaign in anything that I've read. They have said that there were things that were decided by the Elections Commission and local officials that they didn't agree with. But as far as actual fraud in Wisconsin, there has been no evidence of that presented that I've seen in any legal filing from the Trump campaign. But what you're seeing from Johnson is an interesting strategy where he is tying himself to Donald Trump very closely. He's up for re-election 2022 if he runs. Remember, Ron Johnson one time said he'd serve two terms, that was it. That second term is up another couple of years, but he's now thinking about a third term or running for governor. And so you got to watch Ron Johnson, how he proceeds with this. But he also is emblematic of kind of Republicans in general that I'm seeing, where there is a segment of the Republican base that believes this election was, quote unquote, stolen from President Trump. They fully believe that the president's tweets about fraud and all these kinds of things that so far has shown no proof of. There's also a segment of the Republican professional political class and lawmakers who maybe don't believe there was outright fraud, but they are having a hard time with some of the decisions made by local officials and the Elections Commission, because they think those things, the decisions that have been made by those bodies, time and time again, have pushed the envelope of what's in state law, that it led to increasing turnout for Democrats in those areas. So they're kind of pushing back a little bit, talking about irregularities, because they want to have a conversation about what election standards should be going forward, feeling like the set of standards we have right now are not fair to them.
Well, and JR, let's talk about, thanks for that, because yesterday, 15 of the 21 Republican state senators wrote a letter to the governor, and they had 15 questions that they want answered. But then in a, I think in a interview with you, the incoming Senate Majority Leader said one of the things he wants is the ability for poll workers to count absentee ballots before the polls open. Can you elaborate on your interview with Senator Devin?
That was actually Bauer, but Scott Bauer from the AP, but I also talked to Devin LeMahieu about the same topic.
Thank you.
Basically, part of the issue with places like Milwaukee, for example, where they have a central count location for all absentee ballots. That means that every absentee ballot cast in that community goes at one place. They're all counted in one spot. They don't release the results of those that count until everything is done. And that was the big surge of votes you had for Joe Biden around 3:30 a.m., I think it was, November 4th, which really moved Wisconsin from a Trump lead to a Biden advantage. The Republicans were suspicious of that, even though we had talked about for weeks, if not months, that because of the reliance, the heavy reliance on mail-in ballots this election, unlike anything we've seen before, that would put more stress on these central count locations, and they would be reporting the results later than we're used to. I mean, even in the August primary, we saw Milwaukee report things at 3 o'clock in the morning about the absentee ballots from that election. So this was no shock. Those late ballots came in. But it's led to some false claims from the president about a vote dump, quote unquote, in Wisconsin. One of the possible fixes to that situation would be to allow local officials to begin processing, at the very least, absentee ballots the day before the election. Right now in state law, you can't open the envelopes an absentee ballot comes in until the morning of the election, 7 a.m. the polls open. That helped push back the completion of that result. Now, there are a couple reasons why they have that in place. There are some concerns from some folks that if you allowed an earlier process of absentee ballots, you might have some clerks who would let folks who are favorable to them in a partisan way know how the election is going, to kind of give a heads up, hey, you guys are behind your numbers here or whatnot. You know, I don't know how real that worry is, but that's one concern that's been raised. And two, you think about the process clerks go through right now. Early in-person voting wraps up the Sunday before the election. I'm the last you can offer it. That Monday is often a day of preparation for the polls. So there's some concern that adding counting ballots on the Monday or processing whatever's allowed the day before election day might add to the burden that clerks already have. So watch that debate going forward. But what's interesting is we're seeing a lot of calls for quote-unquote election integrity from Republicans. They haven't really defined it so far. But you can see a roadmap that they are unhappy about things like clerks allowing, yes, or clerks being allowed by Elections Commission to fill in missing information in absentee ballot envelopes, like when a witness to an absentee voter forgets his or her zip code, for example. Clerks can fill that in on their own right now. Republicans think that's not allowed under the law. The use of drop boxes was widespread around Wisconsin this fall. That's been raises a concern, and definitely can find voters if they're properly claiming that status. So watch to see how that plays out. And don't forget, the state Supreme Court didn't rule on the merits of the Trump lawsuit in that ruling, but it kind of gave a roadmap, the majority did, or at least Brian Hagedorn, who wrote the majority, of where this future challenge may go. And that position is kind of favorable to where current law is. So if you're Tony Evers or Democratic lawmakers, I'm not sure you have an incentive to agree to tighter restrictions that Republicans may want, knowing that you are having a good guess the state Supreme Court's on kind of the same page you are when it comes to these things.
Before we go to that Supreme Court ruling, which is where we're going to go next, a quick follow-up question, JR. Am I making too much of it? Am I majoring in a minor of that letter to the governor? 15 of the 21 Republican senators sent it, and it was not signed by Senator Coles, Cuyenga, incoming Senator Ballwig, Senator Fayen, or incoming Senator Wimberger. Is that significant or no?
We'll see. You know, kind of keep an eye on it. What I'm watching for is what kind of bill comes out of each house, or maybe a joint bill from both houses, from Republicans, and if the caucuses are on board with both of those bills. If you watched the hearing last week before the elections committees, a joint hearing between both committees, there were definitely some Republicans who had concerns about how the election was run. I don't know, again, that they're going to get a receptive audience from Democrats and Governor Evers with those complaints, however.
Okay. Now, you and I spent part of last Saturday, listening to a very unusual Supreme Court oral arguments in the case filed by the Trump campaign trying to invalidate the 220,000 votes cast in Dana, Milwaukee counties. At about 10:45 on Monday, 75 minutes before the Electoral College was scheduled to meet, that opinion came out. It was 4-3. Let's quote from the majority opinion written by Justice Hagedorn just quickly. The challenges raised by the Trump campaign come long after the last play or even the last game. The campaign is challenging the rulebook adopted before the season began. Striking these votes now, after the election, and in only two of Wisconsin's 72 counties, when the disputed practices were followed by hundreds of thousands of absentee voters statewide, would be an extraordinary step for this court to take. We will not do so. Justice Hagedorn was joined, of course, by Justices Ann Walsh Bradley, Rebecca Dallet, and Jill Karofsky. Then one sentence, or maybe two, from a dissenting opinion filed by Justice Rebecca Grassl Bradley. How astonishing that four justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court must be reminded that it is the law that constitutes the rule book for any election, not Wisconsin Election Commission guidance. And elections officials are bound by the rule of law. She was joined by Chief Justice Pat Rogenczak, Justice Annette Ziegler. What's your take on that 4-3 ruling that we saw about 10:45 last Monday, JR?
Well, the main thrust of the majority opinion written by Brian Hagedorn was that the Trump campaign waited too long to file these challenges. For example, the Trump campaign challenged that advice that clerks have been given by the Elections Commission, they can fill in missing information, these absentee ballot envelopes. That information has been in place, advice has been in place since at least October of 2016, I believe. The Trump campaign also challenged absentee ballot envelopes for those who vote early in person. You're supposed to submit a written application for absentee ballot in Wisconsin before you can vote absentee. The envelope used in many places, including Milwaukee and Dane counties, has that envelope double as a written application. That's been in place for at least a decade. So there's that. Democracy in the Park, another issue that was raised by the Trump campaign. Madison put poll workers in 200 city parks to collect absentee ballots. That happened a month before the election. These things weren't challenged before that. The fourth issue that was raised was indefinitely confined voters. Those are voters who say that they are confined because of age, infirmity, or illness. That status allows you to not have to submit a photo ID when you vote absentee. The decision from Hagedorn said that was basically a meritless argument because they want to throw out some 23,000 votes based off of like less than a dozen Facebook posts that hadn't been verified by the court. So there wasn't sufficient evidence to really dive into that challenge. What's really interesting to me is that while the majority opinion basically said this was all filed too late, Brian Hagedorn wrote a concurring opinion to his own majority opinion, which I almost never see in reading court opinions. And in that concurring opinion, Brian wrote basically a roadmap of where he would have gone on the merits. And on the merits, he didn't have any problems with Democracy in the Park that Madison did. He didn't have an issue with the advice that clerks were beginning by the Elections Commission. Nobody seemed on either side to have a problem with the absentee ballot envelopes that the Trump campaign tried to raise. What's interesting was Hagedorn was originally joined by Ann Walsh Bradley in that concurring opinion. If Dallet and Karofsky had joined him on that as well, that would have been the controlling opinion possibly of the court and become a new standard in Wisconsin about what election law says. I'm not quite sure why those two didn't join. It's always possible that they felt like this entire lawsuit was rushed and inappropriate, because remember, this thing was filed and decided in the span of like a couple of weeks. That's not usually how we decide what the law means in Wisconsin with the state Supreme Court. Right. That said, there's a roadmap there that if there's a future challenge with this composition of the court, where it might go in such a ruling, which is why Republicans may be better off to try and draw up a bill with their concerns than sue again, because I don't know they're going to have a receptive audience with those four justices in the majority of this decision.
Right. And let's also note that just yesterday, the Supreme Court heard a challenge to Governor Evers' orders, that would have put a 25% occupancy rule in place to fight the COVID spread. That Executive Order 3 has since lapsed. So we'll be looking for a ruling on that. But let's close this segment with this very sharp exchange between Justice Karofsky and the Trump campaign lawyer, James Troupas, a former judge appointed by Walker, who then chose not to seek re-election. Very sharp exchange, please.
The people of Wisconsin should be thanked for exercising their civic duty, for doing what is asked of them in coming to vote. And what you want is you want us to overturn this election so that your king can stay in power. And that is so un-American. And for you to say that anyone in Wisconsin engaged in fraud, for you to perpetuate that fallacy on the people of Wisconsin and the people of the United States and America in what has been called the most significant election in our lifetime is nothing short of shameful.
I believe that this country was founded on the principle of the rule of law. When we forget the rule of law, when we forget to enforce mandatory statutes as are involved here, we have lost our country.
Jared, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but we now know the 16 members of the Joint Finance Committee that will draft the legislative response to the budget that Governor Evers will present in February. We're showing a graphic of where they're from and who they are. Obviously, you have two new co-chairs in Representative Mark Bourne and Senator Howard Markline. I'm just going to point out that two of the 16 are from northern Wisconsin, Senator-elect Felskowski and State Representative Zimmerman of River Falls. Just an observation, six of the 16 will not have served on joint finance in the last session, although Senator Coyinga and Felskowski have been on the joint finance in previous sessions. Any PSs on the, now we know the makeup of the Finance Committee?
Well, just underscoring the kind of lack of experience this Congress has compared to past sessions, I mean, John Nygren had chaired the committee for, I think, a record tying four times. Alberta Darling, for assembly co-chair, Alberta Darling had served a record tying six terms as co-chair. She spent more than two decades on the committee. Neither will be there for this budget. It's going to be both a challenge and an opportunity for Mark Bourne and Howard Markline to kind of lead that committee through a budget process with a lot of new faces who maybe aren't used to, one, split government. There are a lot of Republicans who have even served prior to this past 2 years under a Democratic governor. But two, a budget that is going to set up Governor Evers to run for election. Governors that we've covered for a long time, Steve, do two budgets, right? They do the Payne budget, the first one, first 2 years of term, and the reelection budget in the second 2 years. That reelection budget is about, making people happier before they run for re-election. So what can Governor Evers do that might be, A, pleasing to his base, and B, attractive to swing voters ahead of that re-election in what could be a very tight fiscal picture with uncertainty about COVID-19. I think we're in decent shape with the revenue that we're seeing right now, but there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and I don't know how willing Republicans will be to passing a budget that is agreeable to Evers. Don't forget, a year and a half ago, he signed a budget that Republicans tout as their budget. You remember? They kind of felt like they had kind of one-upped him on that. Would Evers sign a budget that they felt like was Republicans felt like was their budget again, or might he be willing to veto this? There's a lot of kind of unknowns out there about how this budget process is going to play out.
Yeah, and just a very quick P.S. on that. You have two members of Joint Finance from Milwaukee, Representative Evan Goyke, Senator Tanya Johnson. You don't have anybody from Dane County because Senator Erpenbach now lives in West Point, which is just, it's not Dane County. Okay, let's move on. There was a PFA action plan recommended this week. It'll go to the governor. It was drafted by DNR, the Department of Justice. Let's look quickly at its recommendations. Science-based PFA standards for soil, groundwater, and sludge, requiring municipalities, some schools, and businesses to test for PFAS. Setting a deadline for fire departments to stop using foam with PFAS, improving the delivery of safe drinking water, to communities impacted by PFAS contamination. Most of this requires action by the legislature and governor, and the DNR is now regulating 40 sites statewide for PFAS contamination. And a report last week showed PFAS showing up at the Dane County Airport area used for fire department training. Thousands of exceedingly high levels of PFAS. And we should also point, JR, as we are taping this show, the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules is debating a motion to overturn DNR rules to implement a bill recently passed that would require fire departments to stop using PFAS. I just find that interesting. Any PS before we move on?
No, just to, as this debate rolls on, that the biggest Republican advocate on the PFAS issue is John Nygren,
yes,
who is co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, because his home district in Marinette, Peshtigo area, is really kind of ground zero for PFAS contamination. He's no longer legislature. He resigned early this month. Now he's in the private sector, Wisconsin Associated Healthcare Plans. So Republicans are missing that voice in this debate. And also, kind of, Dave Hansen, a Green Bay Democrat who'd worked on that issue with Nygren as well, he's retiring. So two of the like leading voices on this issue are no longer going to be around as this debate goes on.
Right. Okay. Final topic before your stock picks. And this is something that we've been debating, well, we've mentioned for months. So let's just talk about the formal Legislative Audit Bureau report on problems processing claims for jobless benefits, what that audit found. It took an average of 13 weeks to resolve 268 claims for unemployment benefits filed between March 15th and April 11. Of those 268, 250 had been resolved by November, but 18 were still pending. DWD was swamped with 8.5 million weekly U of I claims since March 15th. The agency now says 95% of those claims have been processed. And I asked DWD, how many employees did you have a year ago? And they responded 518. And I said, how many did you have in the U of I division right now, December of 2020? 1,800. You and I saw a blizzard of press releases from Republicans criticizing the agency, which has a new interim secretary. Any PSs before we go to your stocks?
Oh, this may be one of the governor's biggest vulnerabilities ahead of the 22 election. The handling of this issue has not been his best moment. And there are real issues there for him going forward about how they resolve this, because the ads write themselves. I mean, the horror stories of people who've been without unemployment checks for weeks and months for various issues are just cringe. You know, you just cringe listening to the pain they've been through. I don't know if the governor's office is prepared for what could be coming down the pipe in 2022 if this issue isn't resolved in a satisfactory way. And even if he gets it done shortly, it's still an issue he's going to deal with in that election. You can see the ads right now.
Okay. Look, I like your stock picks. Rising.
13th Senate District race. So John Jagler, a state rep from Watertown, announced this week that he's running for the seat of Scott Fitzgerald, who is resigning to go join Congress. Jagler joins Don Pridemore, who is a former Republican lawmaker from a different district, who is now running for the Senate seat. A couple things to watch here. One, when is the election actually called? Until there's a vacancy, I don't think the governor can actually call the election. But the farther out it is from November 3rd, the less the lingering anger by Republicans over the election, how it was run, might play a role in this race. Let me explain that. There, like I said early in the show, there is a part of the Republican base that's convinced this election was quote-unquote stolen from Donald Trump. So does this primary, the Republican primary, become somewhat of a litmus test about how pure you are on that issue and how strong is your allegiance to Donald Trump about his claims? Interesting to note, there's always talk of election integrity packages in the legislature from Republicans. Might there be a bill that Jagger could vote on before the election that would show where he's at on these issues? Because, you know, in talking to people, Pridemore not being an incumbent lawmaker, maybe able to lean in a little bit more about this because he's not in office, can say these guys missed the boat on this. But if you have a vote, you know, Jagler has a vote, it could kind of help him on the issue. And, oh, by the way, if he votes for the bill and Evers vetoes it, he can vote on an override, even better for Jagler.
Yeah, okay. We're almost into overtime, so quickly, mixed.
Tom Tiffany, he's the only member of Wisconsin delegation that signed on to this amicus brief of this dubious lawsuit that Texas filed trying to overturn the results in Wisconsin and three other states. You know, I asked people about this issue a little bit. You know, why would Tiffany sign on? They noted, one, he has the Trumpiest district of all the seats in Wisconsin. It's the most pro-Trump. It's not necessarily Republican. It's pro-Trump. There's really a Trump vibe in northern Wisconsin. All he has to really worry about is a primary challenge, so there's that. But also, you know, don't forget Tom Tiffany has refused to vote on a resolution condemning QAnon, this kind of conspiracy fringe group that the FBI has labeled a domestic terrorist threat. He voted against the proposal that would strip Confederate names, I believe, off of our Confederate monuments. You know, Tiffany is definitely in that right wing of the party. And it's good for his district, but it's also not great if he can run statewide. He's kind of running the Trump lane right now. I'm not sure how well that would work if he wants to run statewide, because he's not Trump and doesn't necessarily have the Trump attributes that make that whole thing work.
Okay, quickly on falling, my friend.
UW system funding, look, we have a tuition freeze that's in place now for a decade. The percentage of money that UW is collecting from the states has been going down, so has revenues. There are a couple of big challenges on the horizon for UW. One of the big ones is that tuition freeze. At some point, it will go away. When will it go away, and will this budget be the one that takes it away?
Good point. Okay, coming up next week, I'll be interviewing Meet the New Senate Majority Leader on Tuesday, and we'll be off for a couple weeks because of, obviously, the Christmas holidays and New Year's holidays. So I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Have a happy, safe holiday, and that's Rewind for December 18.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.